Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. Welcome to our final seminar in this series. We're going to be talking about neuromarketing, your professional practice. I have two questions I'd like to ask you as we begin this seminar. I want to ask them and have you think about them, and I'm going to answer a question that was sent in while you're thinking about it, okay? The two questions. So far in this seminar series, what's the most important thing you're taking away to date? And secondly, and what do you still hope we'll cover? Okay? Now, the question that was sent in is an interesting question. When it comes to persuading others, should we focus on potential or reality and experience? Well, as you might guess, persuasion scientists have logged in on this. They have found that a focus on potential seems more compelling to decision makers than actual performance or achievements already accomplished at the very same thing. The potential and the promise of potential outshines the reality. This activates the pleasure center in the brain, the anticipation of buying or achieving or doing something creates that spike of dopamine. This fits with brain science because the experience itself often results in moving to a different system, the brain chemistry system of norepinephrine, which is the system for marathons, not for sprints like dopamine. So the practical part of this, the persuasive pull of potential over reality, holds true in a number of arenas, recruitment, social media, and other decision triggers. So what this suggests in a practical way is that supporting information can be provided immediately to focus on potential, like a testimonial from a trusted source or other persuasive message, and the likelihood of a favorable attitude and action is increased when you do that. So I hope that's helpful, and that was a good question, and I appreciate it. So far in this seminar series, what's the most important thing that you're taking away to date? Anybody want to log in on that? Don't be shy. Anything that that you found useful or found different that you found that might be helpful for your practice? Anybody want to offer anything? What about the other question? What do you still hope we'll cover? Anyone? Guys, I'm getting lonely here. Any responses at all?
Hi, Dave. This is Keith Englehart.
Welcome. Thank you.
You've covered a lot of fascinating ground regarding the neuroscience, and I appreciate all the detail that you've shared with us. And I was wondering if there was a short recipe or default format that could be used as a baseline for applying some of it.
For what purpose now? Get me in the ballpark. What you want to accomplish.
Well, since we're coaches, is for getting people's attention for potential coaching clients.
Well, I would say it's what we know to do, and that you probably do intuitive, and there's great evidence about how much that works. One is to resonate with a client's experience, whether that's each individual coaching session, whether that's for people who you want to engage and to have a conversation that's meaningful for them, is to resonate with their experience, their challenge, their pain point, as we've talked about, and find out how you can get inside that circle where the stick figure is inside the circle. How do you get inside the circle? That's usually by resonating with an experience and then having a conversation about how to proceed and how to collaborate about moving together to achieve the client's goal. But you need to know what they want or what they need so that you can make it about them. And remember the information we have from conversational intelligence, that how we began a statement. If it's begun in a collaborative way, in a way that entices and interests someone, it will stimulate the whole mindset that's associated with bonding and connection, oxytocin, and that mindset will process the remainder of the conversation rather than just giving information or being factual or being authoritarian or especially being negative in any way. So we want to be very aware of what someone else is experiencing and listen for what they need and figure out a way of how we can create a common ground to meet that, whether that's with a group, with an individual. I mean, I do the same thing with a group. If I'm invited to give a keynote or present to a group, I want to meet with, even if it's just a five-minute telephone conversation with the program committee, to ask them what are the biggest challenges of this group. Even though I think I may know, I want to know from them. And then what kinds of presentations have been most successful? An example of that is they'll say no PowerPoint. So I want to really be attuned to the group and their needs and then create a way of addressing that so that it will be a benefit to them. And I believe that's the best way that we can get a response, is to find out what will be authentically of benefit and value to a client or to a group. Keith, does that begin to answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Any other questions or any other things that you'd like to talk about before we begin our material? Well, I'll move into it, and I do want to preserve some time at the end if you have any comments or questions then. So to discuss neuromarketing, there are four questions I want to consider with you, and make each one of these a yes or a no. Jot down your immediate answer, yes or no, to the questions on your outline. Do you earn your living trying to convince others to purchase goods or services? Do you work for yourself or run your own operation, even if part-time? Does your work require elastic skills, the ability to cross boundaries and functions, to work outside your specialty, and to do a variety of different things throughout the day? And four, do you work in education, training, or healthcare? Now, if you answer yes to any one of these four questions, you are in sales and service. If you're a professional coach, doctor, attorney, accountant, business professional, you're in sales and service. To deliver a fantastic experience to client is the best sales strategy there is. When we engage a potential client with a product or service in mind, we want to move them to part with their resources, time, attention, and effort. If they do, we will bring value and they will be better at the end of the engagement. Teachers sell their students. The science lesson you're teaching is the most interesting thing ever. In healthcare, the physical therapist helps someone recover from injury to handle resources, time, attention, and effort, because patients can be healthier if they use these resources wisely. To move people effectively and powerfully requires seeing them as a participant and a collaborator. Now, here's an example of what happens if you don't do that. People consult a physician when they're afraid and when they're in pain, usually. Fewer than 50% of people who get a prescription from the expert consultant, the physician, actually fill it. Of those who do fill it, just under 50% take it as the doctor recommended. So when someone is motivated by fear and pain, inconvenienced by time and travel, and have to pay to consult an expert, less than 25 actually follow that expert advice. They don't have a story of their own to enter with a collaborating expert in that example. Consider this question for yourself and write down a specific number as soon as you hear the question. What percent of your real work involves convincing or persuading people to give up something they value for something you have, something that will bring them great value? A number, a percent of your time. Almost 10,000 professionals around the world were surveyed with this question. Nearly everyone considered this aspect of their work the most crucial component of professional success. Yet while most people believe direct persuasion is crucial for professional success, the time allotted to engaging and directly persuading people was extremely low, in the single digits. What we find valuable and what we actually do can be really different. When we work for ourselves, we are entrepreneurs and we become salespeople as well. What people in sales do is to move people. The persuasion industry, led by neuromarketing, is attuned to influencing everything we buy. What we purchase is for both emotional as well as intellectual reasons, and most often our choices have been influenced in ways so subtle that we have failed to recognize them. Here's an example of a failure in influence. Cigar manufacturer spent considerable money on an advertisement that depicted a beautiful smiling woman handing out cigars to her husband and his friends. This was attractively done in a beautiful English library setting, widely displayed. The result, a dramatic fall in cigar sales. Why do you think that was? Men smoke cigars because in doing so, they unconsciously feel dominant and important. By showing a woman encouraging a man to smoke and being subservient to her offering, the advertisement was psychologically neutering the company's male customers. Here are some misconceptions about selling. I asked my good buddy, Art Wilson, this question. He and I do a retreat for executives, CEOs, within a year or so of retiring called What's Next Exec, and he and I have done a number of things, and he's been a good buddy since our kids were coached by both of us in grade school. Before he took an early retirement to start his own hugely successful consulting company and co-found another consulting firm, he was for several years the number one person in sales in IBM's group of over 10,000 sales professionals before he moved to a senior executive position there. Here are the two biggest misconceptions that he passed on to me to pass on to each of you. One, a misconception. Selling is a natural gift. For more than 90% of people, including the most successful salespersons, this is not true. Someone may do the right thing for the right reason, but it has to be combined with the right style and emotion. The second biggest misconception, the best salespeople have no call reluctance. Over 90% of the best salespeople in the world still have call reluctance, but they do it anyhow by getting in optimum state of mind and sticking to their plan. So pick people you want to reach out to and do it. You do not have to be motivated, but you do have to have a plan and stick to it. Shrink the change, a designated number of calls each day. And my response to Art when he told me both of these, why didn't you tell me this a long time ago? So consider these two questions. If the person you're selling agrees to buy, will his or her life improve? And two, when your interaction is over, will the world be a better place than when you began? If the answer to either of these questions is not yes, you need to recalibrate. Here are a marketer's top three mistakes. Assuming people are rational, assuming people are eager for change, assuming that once someone knows things the way you know them, they're going to choose what you have to choose or offer. Remember, it's what you think you already know that will most prevent you from learning. Let's talk about the 1% now. Professor Howard Koh teaches law and emphasizes that in an attempt to understand the law or an understanding just about anything, the key is to focus on the 1%, to not get lost in the details, but to think about the essence of what's really important, the 1% that gives life to the other 99%. Understanding that 1% and especially being able to explain it to others is the hallmark of a strong mind and a strong position. The 1% is the essence of clarity. Whether you're selling a product or service or trying to convince anybody of anything, What's the 1%? When you can answer that question and convey it to others, you and they are likely to be moved. Einstein said, if you can't state your position simply, you don't understand it well enough. And Seth Godin said, if you can't state your position in 8 words or less, you don't have a position. The purpose of a 1%, or think of the purpose of a pitch, is not necessarily to move someone to adopt your idea. The purpose is to offer something so compelling that it begins a conversation. It begins a relationship. The other person begins seeing you as a participant to eventually arrive at an outcome that's beneficial to both of you. So here's a value proposition or a pitch, three common types of value propositions. One is the one-word pitch. What is the one characteristic that you most want associated with your name, your business, your brand? A one-word equity. When anyone thinks of you, they associate that word. When anyone says that word, they think of you. For me recently, it was to make up a word, NeuroMentor. I like it so much, I trademarked it and initiated the first of a new series of online offerings. Other examples, each to date, are a little more famous than the NeuroMentor. What technology company do you think of when you hear the word search? What credit card company comes to mind when you hear the word priceless? Obviously, Google and MasterCard. In his 2012 re-election campaign, President Obama built his entire strategy around one word, forward. The second value proposition, the question pitch. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was running for president in a very grim economy. Reagan asked a simple question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The question was designed to make people work a bit harder, especially to come up with their own reasons for agreeing or not. When people came up with their own reasons for agreeing or believing something, they endorsed that belief more strongly and become more likely to act on it. That's why you don't want to give people answers. You want to give people questions. And here's the third, the Twitter pitch. Brief, simple, specific, a micro message of 140 or fewer characters. The mark of an effective tweet, like an effective pitch, is that it engages recipients and encourages them to take the conversation further. Further may be responding, sharing a tweet, clicking a link, or signing on for a seminar. What tweets do you think have the very highest rating? Readers assign the absolute highest rating to tweets that ask questions of followers. This confirms the power of questions both to engage and to persuade. So what we want to do with a potential client, listen to learn. First, preparation. Three key questions will help you prepare your value proposition, your pitch, whichever of the above varieties you choose, or if you make up something that's a combination or not even related to three. You will clarify your purpose and strategy by making sure you can answer these three questions. After someone hears your value proposition, question one, what do you want them to know? Two, what do you want them to feel? And three, what do you want them to do? Be sure it includes all of those. Then, before you connect with a prospect, write down the following four things. If this call or discussion or email is successful, what's the next best action for that person and for me to take? Two, what would be the highest value objective of a client for this interaction? What would we talk about and what would be the highest value for that client? Three, what are some good questions to ask the prospect? And four, what are some additional possible topics for discussion if we have time? Now, for most people, the opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting. When others speak, we usually divide our attention between what they're saying now and what we're going to say next. And the result is a mediocre halfway position on both. Some professionals don't even bother to wait. A typical study found that physicians interrupt patients on the average after the first 18 seconds that they began to speak during an appointment to try to explain their story to a physician. This often prevents the patient from describing what brought him or her to the office in the first place. Here's an example of listening differently. Suppose you're raising money for a charity and ask someone to contribute $200. She may say no, but is more likely to say, well, sorry, I can't give $200. Consider that an offer. Perhaps she can donate a smaller amount. Or she might say, no, I can't give right now. Consider that as an offer as well. The obvious move is to focus on the right now and ask when might be a better time. Or consider the entire sentence as an offer, perhaps to contribute to your charity in some other way, such as being a volunteer. This way to hear responses as offers, which come in all shapes and sizes, is to change the way you listen and then change the way you respond. Consider hearing everything that's said as an offer and to respond to the offer component. When both parties view an encounter as an opportunity to learn, the desire to sell or win really fades into the background. It's a different mindset instead of something that's essential, collaboration and engagement. When we move from selling to serving, we engage the recipient as a collaborator and become empathically attuned to the needs and to our effectiveness in benefiting that person. This non-sales selling is the ability to influence, to persuade, and to change behavior while striking a balance between what others want and what you can provide them. We elicit from people what their specific goals are and frame what we do to help them achieve those goals. In persuasion science, emphasis on the potential, as I mentioned, is more compelling about information about what's already occurred, even when it's outstanding. And as I mentioned, the reason is that the past has already happened, so it's closed. Looking to the future and the potential allows the expansiveness of possibility and, as I also mentioned, the activation of a different part of the brain to look at possibilities and the limitless future. Anticipation triggers the pleasure center. So let's look at sales mastery now. And there are three phases of sales mastery: engage, enroll, and create conviction. Let's look at these as steps. Each is based on knowing who your client is, the specific reason you're about to engage in the conversation, and the specific person you're about to engage in the conversation, to know as much as you can about that person. So first, engage. Connect and create interest. This is an application of social and emotional intelligence. Think about it in this way as one possibility. Important to your story is your hero. Who's the hero of your story? Heroes come in all varieties: teller, listener, customer, product, location, tribe. The hero needs to fit the goal. Stories involve the art of the tell, and they involve the hero, the character in the story who gives the audience a point of view. All the passion in the world won't do any good unless we have some place to put it. That's where the hero comes in. The hero serves as the reader's guide and surrogate. The hero is the character that the reader or listener identifies with, or the viewer. If the audience experiences the story through the hero, and the story leads the hero to embrace a call to action, then your audience will automatically hear your call to action as well. The hero, again, is the person, place, product, or brand that enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. Remember, we talked earlier that the primary reason we do something is because we imagine how it's going to make us feel. The primary reason we buy something is how we imagine it's going to make us feel. In every story, there's one person usually who can make the difference. That's the hero. The character the reader or viewer identifies with. Focus on the experience you deliver. Not all of your background, not all of the research, not all of your training, not all the stuff about what coaching you do, the experience you deliver. Remember that we spoke of business stories like novels and films consisting of three parts: the challenge, the struggle, and the resolution. The hero faces the challenge and fights through the struggle to the resolution. The hero sometimes may seem surprisingly hard to pinpoint, but unless you do, you have no story. When people donate to a charitable cause, it's not to save the lives of tens of thousands of people, but the best story is how you save one child. You can be the hero in that story. For example, donation increases when moving from the abstract to the specific. A famine in Ethiopia was significantly enhanced in donation when provided a picture of Royka, a 7-year-old who faces a threat of severe hunger or even starvation. In the first week that picture appeared, donation increased 25%. How do you make your client the hero for your professional engagement? Well, we ask, what do you want to achieve? Where would you ideally be in 1 year? What constitutes an amazing achievement for you? Then we know how to help them get there. You need to know the single most important thing you can offer them. And remember, it's not about you, it's about them. So here are 6 keys to preparation to answer that question, the most important thing you could offer them. Know your client's challenges and needs. Know your own product or service and its advantages and benefits. Not that you're going to spell these out and you're not going to start talking in paragraphs. Know your competition. Never engage in depreciating a competitor. 4, know the potential objections in order to have a brief answer ready. 5, expect the best, a state of positive expectation. And finally, create demand, ideally for the client to convince himself or herself. And really important, anchor yourself for success. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state. Remember what we talked about last time about mastering states of mind and how essential that is. The hallmark of a true professional is the ability to manage a state of mind and get in a peak state for that specific task. So, here are some keys to making effective contact. 1, set specific goals. 2, be creative, playful, and fun. My favorite grandmother said, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. 3, have a plan for what you're going to say. And 4, get referrals. Even if someone doesn't buy anything, you still may get a referral from them. And think about it that way. 5, do it in abundance to qualified contacts. The things that can stop you from making contact include not being prepared, not being in a peak state, or believing that you're an interruption. To engage the client, connection and rapport are the foundation of all influence. Clients will choose you because they trust you, like you, and especially because they have confidence in you. This confidence is the belief that you can help them get what they want or need. Importantly, they will choose you because you have their best interest at heart. What's important in selling is to establish rapport and develop trust. The primary question, whose interest do you have in mind? The prospect needs trust and confidence. And to know that the answer to that question is the client's best interest. Caring people buy from caring people and will even help you close as long as you have the prospect's best interest at heart. People want to feel cared for. We want to be appreciated. That's one That's two of the six basic human needs. People love people who change their state. That's why entertainers are paid so much more than educators, pro athletes more than service people. We want to be around people who change our state. That's why you want to listen to my grandmother. If you're not doing it, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. What we do in mentor coaching should be fun. Preparation for anything you do, a seminar, coaching, should be fun. The law of reciprocation, whatever you put out, it will come back many-fold. That's true for positive or negative things. Here are three psychological tactics for earning instant credibility. This is the last thing that I've added to what I'm saying, because this was a response to a particular question, and I was able to find some very recent research. One, argue against your own product or service. That may sound goofy, but indicate who the product or service is not for. It indicates you're not trying to sell it to everybody, but a more specific benefit for certain people. And you know who that is, and you know who it's not. Secondly, people believe precise numbers. Which of these do you think is more believable? 60% of American households recycle regularly. 60.37% of American households recycle regularly. 78% of participants says the more specific number was more believable because it inferred accuracy. And third, when you make a claim, provide proof to back it up. Here are some different forms of proof if no scientific studies exist. Statistics, personal stories, testimonials, research, professional or media-given accolades. The second component of sales mastery, enroll. So this is about how to qualify and discover your clients' buying strategies to enroll them. What are their needs, their interests, their challenges? The real problems we can help them solve. Highlight the problems and resonate with their experience of the challenge or the pain, because this is what the client minimizes or denies. Here are four qualifying questions to have in mind, not necessarily to ask out loud, but to have in mind, for their needs. What does this prospect really need? For their wants, what does this prospect really want? Their wounds, there's probably a better word for that. What are some of their needs, pains, or challenges? And authority, do they have the authority to make the decision? Remember, we talked about focus changes state. What would be the best benefit to you of doing this? When your question prompts someone to imagine, it becomes real for them. If you told them instead of asking them, they wouldn't believe. Remember, facts and information are outside in, the outer circle of the brain, not the decision-making areas. So here are the keys. To enrolling. One, ask questions. Questions create a focus, a canvas to paint a picture. Ask questions and they will get a real experience from inside themselves and give real answers for them. Questions are the greatest asset. Questions empower you and the buyer by putting them in a state that makes things more congruent. Two, do something very real. Engage all five senses to give a full experience. Some of the highest paid people in this country are state changers, as I mentioned, people who induce state changes. What sells is what puts someone in a better state. So here's an exercise to do this. Every night for 10 nights, come up with three ideas about how you can get your client to feel like they already own your product or service before even buying it. Think of creative and unique ways to do that consistently, or, depending on your biorhythms, first thing in the morning. Now, most of the 30 that you come up with may be goofy, but you only need one or two to change your business. An example, is a realtor whose clients like a particular house they viewed, but they haven't decided. He then orchestrates an entire meal catered to the family in the home they're considering and most like. They have a fabulous meal. They see the fresh flowers he's brought in and can picture themselves in that house. Well, they don't have to picture it. They've already done it. His close rate, 80%, over 10 times his nearest competitors. Model success. Find successful people and see what they do. They most likely will make the experience real using all five senses. If someone's eating food, they change their state, and the state that's linked to perceiving it is seem to be related. That's why so much business is done at lunches and dinners. The realtor changes the state of mind of the purchasers and linked pleasure and family togetherness with that meal at that house. He created a Rorschach, a vivid, all senses involved Rorschach that the family projected their hopes and their excitement onto. Whatever's happening around someone, when they have a strong feeling, it will be linked. It may not be logical. Pavlov's dog linked the bell with food and salivated, then the bell only was enough to cue the anticipation. The bell intrinsically has nothing to do with food, but if it's linked, it has power. Put people in an environment that creates the state you want to link to your product. Another example, the brilliant series of Super Bowl Budweiser commercials of the dog and the Clydesdale, who are buddies, one of my favorites. They induce a state of mind of connection and bonding and release of oxytocin in the brain. Here's the best signal of a successful oxytocin release. Aww. The message goes right to your hippocampus to connect that experience with Budweiser. Or another example, the new car smell that puts you in a state to buy a new car. BMW makes their brochures with a new car smell, and I know that to be true. The total sensory and emotional experience with the salesperson, which is you, matters. Get creative. Brainstorm. There's always a way to make it real and effective. Ask questions. Create an experience. Point. Tell. Paint. Paint a picture. You want a blank that will blank. Is that correct? You want an investment that will bring you security and income. Is that correct? Ask a question that will put people's minds back on their challenge, their problem. Point out the reason they're buying. Make it real by getting them to refocus on that original challenge. Paint to emphasize if all this came true. If you had a seminar for your people, what would be the most important thing they get out of it? If you have three results, what would those be? If you don't get those, what will it cost you? An example. In one of my training, in one of my offerings for a training program, if you had an internal mentoring program for your corporation, how would your people benefit? Ask questions, don't tell them. Ask how much more effectiveness or success would you have if you did this. Don't tell them. Get them to tell you. Here's an exercise. Write five questions to make it feel to the client that he already owns your product or service. Five questions to make it feel to the client like he already owns your product or service. An example is the real estate agent showing the house. The agent doesn't ask what you think about the living room, but instead ask where you would put your entertainment center. The agent wants to have the prospect experience it as if they've already bought it. And the third component of sales mastery, compel, in other words, create conviction. People don't buy facts. They buy benefits. Selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy, they must feel certain they will get what they want. Certainty is one of the six basic human needs. Conviction starts with you first, then your client. But they have to buy or attend an event for their reasons, not yours. the number one way, give them the experience and conviction they will get what they want out of your product or service. The number two way, match to their number one value, their ideal. For example, if their ideal is freedom, then show them how it will enhance their freedom. Find the dominant emotion for buying, even though the prospect will want to believe it's for logical reasons. Remember how our brains work. Copywriters tell us that there are five great motivators for marketing. Fear. Car and life insurance people use this. Exclusivity. To be special or chosen. Greed. There's a negative connotation about this, but the true meaning of greed is a rapacious desire for more, to succeed massively. Guilt. Nonprofits sometimes use this. Insurance companies sometimes use this. And finally, a need for approval. Product advertisements for cars and watches and other prestigious social icons. Do one feature at a time, not the whole load. Give prospects several units of conviction to justify buying. And a unit of conviction, this is in your outline, and I'm not going to go over this in much detail, but look at those seven units of conviction, because these build on each other, and these are each important. Now, how you say, not what you say, makes the difference. And remember the law of reciprocation? When someone says no, it begins a process of them wanting to say yes. The task of sales is the science of persuasion. The questions you ask people determine what they focus on. At any time, we're only focusing on a small band of data, what's available to us. Our brains are like a camera. We only see what we focus on. And you can get the person to stop focusing on whether or not they're going to do something and focus on, well, let's say for a moment you were going to do mentor coaching with me or take my seminar or training. When would you do it? Then they're focusing on buying and adding emotion and possibly the new experience of the new choice when they focus on moving forward. Buying needs to mean pleasure, not buying needs to mean pain. When it feels real, it's emotional. And remember, our imagination is 10 times more important than our will. Fear is the number one reason that stops action. Learn how to utilize imagination, guided visualization, to make it real for people and paint it vividly. Ask questions. And you know this, when you ask a question, it changes what somebody focuses on. Whenever somebody's focused on some negative reason, ask a question, and they'll refocus instead of on their negative flow on what you ask about. Make it real and assume the sale. When people don't buy, it's because they've linked buying with more pain than not buying. When they do buy, they link buying with more pleasure than not buying. And remember, you've heard this from me other times, people buy for emotional reasons, then justify with logic. Keep that in mind about what you lead with. Another component, convert objections into commitments. If someone has an objection, rather than ignore that objection or talk around it, you want to know specifically what it is. An objection equates to asking for more information. That's a simple reframe. The best salespeople average 5 objections before a conversion. And be sure that an objection is not the projected voice of you, the seller. Well, I don't think they'll be able to afford my services. I'm just going to. An objection does 3 things. Provides the opportunity to hear the primary concern. It often crystallizes the primary concern so that you can then address it and reframe it. Secondly, it's an opportunity to understand that person's belief and fear. And thirdly, it's the strongest opportunity to get the real reason. And consider that an objection is a question in disguise. Objections are signposts. They're your resources. The best way to respond to an objection is to take each objection and interpret it as a question. So rather than a reason for not buying, it's a question to request more information. I can't afford means please show me how I can afford so it's worth it. I have to talk it over with someone else. This means please give me enough reasons so I can go ahead and buy it without having to check in and get someone else's opinion. Welcome an objection because it's information and a stepping stone to success. Treat an objection as powerful and important. Perhaps even compliment the person who offers it as a good question. The objection is a good question because it allows both sides to think about it and consider it. A mistake is to fight the objection. The key to influence is to align with the person. In spite of the fear, will the benefit be greater doing it? If the answer is yes in their gut, they will proceed. So here are some considerations, some specific, practical, I hope, considerations to convert objections into commitments. Don't engage the objection by countering it. Focus directs attention. Hear them out. And this is in your outline. Feed it back as a question. It puts the objection back to the questioner, who then has to explain. Often when someone tries to explain an objection, they withdraw it. It's too much trouble. Get more information. Is it the real objection? 5, align with the prospect to collaborate. In a collaboration, you're on the same side. It's a different neurochemical system of the mindset of collaboration than one of objection or of an adversarial encounter. Do not counter the question or the objection. An alignment would be, I appreciate and respect how you feel about that. Let's look at that. 6, turn the objection into a question. Reframe. Questions generate focus. You can't answer an objection, but you can answer a question. Well, that brings up a question. It seems a real question is, can you get enough value to justify buying it? Or sounds like the real question is, how can you get benefits now? Focus on the benefit, not the concern. For example, if there's an issue with expense, reframe it. Brag about it. Do it up front. 7, answer the question. Don't ever forget that as an option. It's simple. And 8, assume the sale. The best persuaders assume the sale. Congratulate them on a wise decision. But don't thank them for the sale. The congratulations focuses on a wise decision. And here's some thoughts about the psychology of closing that I want to really close with. This is the point that both the salesperson and the prospect hate the most. Do the close as quickly and as painlessly as possible. And a man had a painful tooth that he knew needed to be extracted. He called his dentist, whose patient he'd been for a long time. The two knew each other really well. He asked how much the dentist would charge him to extract a tooth and how long would it take. The dentist said, well, I'll charge you $185, but it'll only take a minute. The man responded, only a minute? That's a lot of money for just a minute. The dentist responded, well, if time is an issue, I can take as long as you want. Have your closings planned in advance, word for word, but sound natural and spontaneous, like you're talking, not reading from a script. Some major requirements for closing. Positive, eager, enthusiastic. The client's requirements must be clear. The client must understand what you're offering and value it, which you found out by asking questions. The client must have rapport, friendship, trust. They must know and find benefit in what they will get. And your product or service needs to be suited to them. So these 4 aspects, prospects must want it, need it, afford it, use it. So some closing strategies. Never tell a client he's wrong. A man convinced of his will is of the same opinion still. Same for women, I understand. Go with the objection, indicating it's a valid concern. Then engage in the message. Get third-party proof. Someone else who had a similar objection saying how it worked and how glad they were of the purchase. Don't knock the competition. Sell the value and the benefits of your product. Don't engage in personal issues with the client. Don't assume authority you don't have. Promises you can't keep or overselling. And avoid negative expectations, such as deciding the person's not going to buy or can't afford it. Remember, the hero is the person place, product, or brand that enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. How can you make your client the hero of his or her own story? Make it easy and create a future. Create a relationship that lasts through the years. The most important part of engagement is to generate a relationship, a lifetime relationship, referral reciprocity, more value than what's expected. And to prevent buyer's remorse, think about future pacing. Future pacing occurs every time somebody purchases. Have buyers imagine themselves in the future, ways they're going to use the product in the future, a year from now. What will you be doing with this training that will make you glad you've done it? Link something present to your product. I build this into my training of mentor coaches, a quarterly mentor group, and a white paper for corporate mentoring programs. After the training, a monthly mentor group teleconference for 12 months, each around a specific continuing education or learning topic. Give them a reason to buy, theirs, not yours, emotional and logical, both parts of the brain. People will put off buying if they can, so build units of conviction. Make it fun, laugh, change states. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Have I said that before? So, finally, here are some strategies of successful people and top sellers. It's a 6-point summary of what we do. 1, we affect our own emotional state. Reset after the last experience, a number one quality. Prepare ourselves physically and emotionally. 2, qualify prospects. Find their deepest needs, the core emotional need that drives the person, a pain, a hurt, a challenge, then teach them how to get it through what you offer. 3, manage the client's state as well as your own. 4, give prospects a way to justify buying, to justify getting what you have to satisfy the need they have. 5, flexibility. The person most flexible controls the situation. To be successful, know the outcome, take action, know what getting closer and getting further away both look like. Change your approach until you get what you want. And 6, become a team player, consistently attuned to the client's needs. Is there more value than the concern they bring? Create and sustain interest. Build trust and rapport continuously. I want to move to a discussion now, questions, thoughts, clarifications that you have, but I first want to tell you how much I've enjoyed putting together this series of seminars for you and how much I appreciate your input for the questions that you have that have guided me and some of the things that I've included or emphasized more because of those questions and your feedback. And I'm grateful for your positive feedback, and I'm grateful for your presence here. It's been truly fun. I hope it's been beneficial to you. These recordings will be up for, I believe, at least 30 days after the last date, which is today. So anytime you want to go back and listen to something again, it's there. So thank you for the privilege of doing this with you. And hold on, I'm going to put us on conversation mode. Okay, I'm interested in any thoughts or questions or comments that you have, anything you'd like to talk more about or share. Anyone about anything? It's even sort of related.
Just so I can see how it really takes a lot of practice. As a new person myself, it makes a lot of sense. I just, you have to work out the kinks until you each get a particular flow, and you just don't know, you have enough of different situations that you've gone through.
And that's the key, to be flexible about it, to have fun with it, and to continue learning. And hopefully that continued learning and the creative endeavors and engagements that you have will be sustaining for a professional lifetime, and that it will never stop, and it will always be fun because you're always creatively learning and providing true value and benefit to others. And all of these principles about influence, persuasion, and neuromarketing are simply principles to better inform you to better meet the needs of clients, and you're both going to be immensely more successful in doing that, massively successful when you are doing that and have an authentic interest. And the experiences will come, and you may reflect back on something when you find yourself doing it. So just to me, the challenge is to deconstruct something to its basics, to really understand how it's put together so that we can construct exactly the story we want going forward in every aspect of our lives, and to help our clients develop their stories in a better way. The best way to do that is to really understand our own story and to have a true mastery of that. And that is in itself beneficial to clients, not just the content, but the process, because they're downloading a number of things, including a model of how you operate, the confidence that you have, which they're purchasing while they think it's about other things. I think all of these things are immensely valuable and can make a major difference for someone who is your client for the rest of their lives. And you know from what we do in coaching how this is, how change-making this is for people, and how it does influence them for the rest of their lives. So thanks for that comment. Any other comments or thoughts or questions? Well, thank you again, and if anything comes up, or if you have other thoughts or questions, or those of you who are listening on the recording, and I know there are a number of you in different areas of the country and different continents who are listening on the recording. So if, when you listen to this, because of schedule or time zone issues and have questions, shoot me an email. I'll be eager to hear. So thank you all very much, and I wish you luck. But as one of my early supervisors said, I needn't, but good luck comes to good players. So I'll be eager to hear how things go for you, and if I can be of help, I hope you'll let me know. Thanks very, very much. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Bye. Thank you.